From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yeah, Zorba. How do you improve dementia? By remembering baseball scores. Not exactly, but we'll talk about people who do that. And doctors prescribing certain medications that we use for incontinence. And do those medications actually produce a risk of dementia? And some other medications that may also increase the risk. Interesting observational study. What does it mean?
What's our recipe to that?
Eggplant with braised chickpeas. Now, I know Tom is a big eggplant guy. Whenever there's eggplant on the menu, Tom goes, whoa, I can't wait, an eggplant sandwich. But for those of you who like eggplant, and I'm one of them, this is a great recipe. Are you interested, Tom?
Oh, ho, ho. I can't wait. Another eggplant sandwich.
Not quite Bah Humbug, but close to that.
Okay, let's get to the phones. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, our first caller is a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I am calling. I have a question regarding my occupation. I'm a registered nurse. I take care of hospice patients. And my question is, oftentimes I'm taking care of patients that are end-stage dementia, and I'm curious as to why they are still taking medications such as cholesterol medications and vitamins, and really would just like Dr. Zorba's input as to what age, even if it's not a patient with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, when should you think about or consider stopping those medications?
Sure. Well, first of all, when it comes to dementia, the idea, here it is, if you have significant dementia, the idea of taking a cholesterol medication seems to me to be totally out of whack. It doesn't make any sense. Here you have somebody who's demented, you're putting them on cholesterol medications, why are you going to do that? Now, you can argue the other way. You can say, hey, I'm the loved one, I have durable power of attorney, I want them to stay on cholesterol medication. So number one goes to the person who has power of attorney. That's the person who ultimately makes the decision. And I think that's really important. You know, it doesn't go to the doctor, that's for sure. It doesn't go to anyone else who makes the decision other than a loved one. But that person then you have to sit down with that person and say, well, what drugs do you think they really need to be on? And you have to have a good, robust conversation. Now, if you've got high blood pressure, you definitely should stay on those medicines because you might get a stroke. You know, and strokes are awful. You know, and if you've got a cholesterol-lowering medication, well, someone may say, look, they want to be on cholesterol meds as much as long as they want to. And somebody else may say, hey, you know what? It's a good way to go with a heart attack. All of a sudden, I'll get a heart attack. I'll go into ventricular fibrillation and I'll die. And this is really a very, very common thing. This is not unusual. Do you work with a lot of people with dementia?
I do, yes. You know, probably the majority of the patients I work with are either dementia or cancer patients.
You know, the other issue is quite often physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs who work with patients, we haven't put people on medicines, but we don't think about taking them off. So here it is, they're taking a vitamin, you know, and we don't have a lot of evidence the vitamin really does anything. It's another pill for them to swallow. Why are they taking them? So it's kind of a matter of just looking over everything, even from the doctor, nurse, practitioner point of view. And I think that makes a difference. Now, when do you stop taking medicines when you're old and feeble? Well, that's kind of a different issue. How old are you?
60.
So if you're 25, people might consider you to be old, but you know, 60 is not old, right?
No. The new 40.
60 is the new 40. But that is exactly right. When I grew up, people often died when they were 65, 66 of a heart attack. That was very common. And that, of course, is not the case.
You can tell I'm listening carefully to this conversation.
That's right. Tom is listening as an octogenarian. Easy to say, hard to spell. He's listening. So, you know, I think if you're robust and you're healthy, you stay on those medicines. That's what I think. The same with vitamins. And I'll tell you something interesting along this. The guidelines say that at a certain age, stop doing colonoscopies. You know, I believe it's at the age of 75. I can't remember exactly where the guidelines are. Mm-hmm. But what about the person who's really active and healthy at 75? I mean, they can get colon cancer. And so should you really stop at 75? We don't have much evidence that people over the age of 75, that it's good for them. But that's because a lot of people over 75 die by the time they're 85. You know, so our evidence is lacking because people have potholes that they stumble in and they die from something else. So I think if people are robust and healthy, they should stay in their medicines. I have one interesting issue, a personal issue with this. When my mom developed Alzheimer's or other dementia, I really don't know what she died from in 81. You know, when she went into the hospital, she was on a whole slew of medications that her doctor had her on. And she had Alzheimer's, significant Alzheimer's, for a good 6 or 7 years. And my dad was power of attorney at that time. And I said, you know, she's not swallowing so many pills. And he said, you know what? I think they're good for her. That was it. He had power of attorney. And in fact, he kept her at home, and that might have been part of his keeping her at home. You know, the placebo effect of the vitamin might have helped, and he was trying to keep her healthy. But he was in charge. He made the decision.
Well, thank you so much for your
time. You're welcome. Keep up your good work with hospice.
I will.
That really...
I get way more than I give, trust me.
How wonderful is that? How wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for sharing this.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks for that call. And we have a somewhat related topic here, Zorba, improving the lives of those with dementia.
Right. Well, you know, they always say, if you want to keep your mind up, do crossword puzzles. Okay, Tom, when was the last time you did a crossword puzzle?
Almost never.
That's right. And I'll tell you something. I have not done a crossword puzzle and completed one since high school. And that's because I came from a family of inveterate non-spellers. And one of the great things of Microsoft Word that I absolutely loved, I went from Word Perfect to Microsoft Word because they had an auto-correct feature. So I didn't have to think about which way to spell receive. Is it E-I or I-E? No matter which way I spelled it, it came out right. So for those people who don't spell and don't like crossword puzzles, spelling is, you know, is essential for doing that crossword puzzle. But these are groups of people that are using something else. They're using their past memory to try to actually exercise their memory. And they're going back and looking at baseball scores, looking at baseball things, remembering games and things like this. And it's just a wonderful idea of just using your brain as a muscle. And it's these baseball reminiscence therapy places or groups are happening all over the country. Do you like baseball?
Yeah, kind of.
Do you follow baseball?
Not really. No, I don't.
Did you ever follow baseball?
As a kid, yeah.
As a kid. When did you stop?
I was at the first Milwaukee Brewers game. I was in high school at the time.
Yeah, the first, And you mean when the Braves left and went to Atlanta?
Brewers, yeah. I shouldn't have gone to Atlanta, I know that. But no, I quit. After a while, I quit paying attention to baseball.
No, I've never followed baseball, but I remember having friends who knew all the statistics. They knew all the stats. I wonder how they did in college. Yeah. They must have been really good at numbers. But you knew people who knew every baseball player, what there are, how their hitting was, how everything else was.
I remember that Billy Bruton won that game, that first game, with a home run in, I think it was the 10th inning.
Hey, not bad.
He was not a home run hitter in his career, but it was very exciting.
Not bad, you see.
I was in the bleachers, of course, because I couldn't afford it. But it was like a $2 a ticket.
$2 a ticket. Those days are gone, even with the bleachers. But this brings up a whole idea about reminiscence and the importance, for instance, of reminiscence for moving your memory and jogging your memory, because those things can really make a difference. And if you don't like crossword puzzles, as we don't, you might consider baseball reminiscence therapy. Or how about basketball reminiscence therapy? I knew I would hit you with that.
That works better for me, yeah. 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, back to the phones. A listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi, Tom. I'm another Tom.
Oh, okay. Good to talk with you. How can we help?
Well, Dr. Zorba, I'm 71 years old, and I'm in great health. I don't take any prescriptions, but I'm running out of saliva at night. So what I've done is search the internet, and they all talk about prescription medicines creating a shortage of saliva, but I don't have that background, and I can't find anything. And when I talk to my GPs, they say, you're getting old, and that's your problem.
Well, first of all, you are getting old, and that is your problem. Let me tell you, let me start out with that. That is the problem. Now that we have that actually out in the open, let's move a little bit forward.
Yeah.
How are your gums and teeth? You go and see dentist?
Yeah, and one dentist told me my gum health was better than 80% of the people of my age.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. Okay, so it's not a gum problem, not a tartar problem. What kind of toothpaste do you use?
I've been using that Colgate with the triclosan forever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I tell people is go to something that is a sensitive toothpaste like Sensodyne. Immediately do that. And basically, Sensodyne has fewer things in it when you brush your teeth. There's just less stuff, chemicals in it, and other things. It's a more, quote, natural toothpaste. There's nothing natural about toothpaste, but it's more than that. And see whether or not the toothpaste is an issue. That's kind of one of the first things that we look at. How's your diet?
It's semi-Mediterranean with a lot of aberrations.
Semi-Mediterranean with a lot of aberrations. Now, that is a very interesting way of putting it. And pray tell, what might be said aberrations?
Well, I don't use as much olive oil. Okay. I use grapeseed oil for my little bit of cooking that I do. I almost never eat any fast food. I almost never eat out. And I get almost maybe half the amount of vegetables that the Mediterranean diet would call for. But I do eat a fair number of fresh salads.
Sounds good.
Coleslaw-type salads.
Anything with fruits and veggies sounds good. Okay, so it's not a dietary issue. Once again, toothpaste might be part of the issue. How's your hydration? Do you drink enough water, do you think?
I try to. A lot of days I'll drink 6 glasses of water.
Okay. Why? Tell me about, is it the dry mouth? What sort of symptoms do you have?
Well, I just have no saliva at all. I keep a glass of water by my bedside, and I sleep on my side, and so I wake up about every 2 hours and turn over. And when I do, my mouth is as dry as it can be. And
okay, so it's a bedtime. It's a bedtime issue. And your nose. I want to talk about your nose. You breathe through your nose well? Do you have nose injuries at all?
That's a problem because when I was a boy, I broke my nose and never had it fixed. So. Mm-hmm. I pretty much am a mouth breather at night.
So that's the issue. So a couple of suggestions, easy suggestion. Flonase, which is a steroid spray available with a prescription and without a prescription now, can sometimes open that nose. 2 squirts in the morning, 2 squirts in the evening. It's a steroid nasal spray. And basically, you've got to open your nose in order to be able to breathe. Otherwise, your mouth, the dryness in your mouth is caused by, number one, age, number two, a mouth breather. When you're at bedtime. And when you were younger, when you were a mouth breather, you were producing enough saliva to do it. In the meantime, go get a humidifier, an ultrasonic humidifier, put it close to the bed so that you're humidifying the air, so that when you're mouth breathing, your air is going to actually have a lot of moisture in it. So that's what you want to do topically, top of your body. In other words, that actually going onto the mucous membranes is going to help you. And place it close to where you're breathing, especially on your side at bedtime. Moisturize the air, change the toothpaste, Flonase to the nose, and if that all fails, you may finally, after all of these years, look it towards getting your nose fixed if the ENT doctor says they can help. Because you're 70, you've got at least 3 more decades of life ahead of you if you're not in any meds and you're eating the right stuff and you're exercising and not smoking. You got a long way to go before you perish.
Well, that's a good thought.
That's a good thought, exactly. You got things you can do. You've got things you can do. So, well, thank you so much for your call.
Appreciate it. And Tom, 71, not so old.
Yeah, you're not an old time.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Dr. Zorba and Tom.
Okay, 800-462-7413, 800-462-7413. Now before the break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Believe it or not, Zorba, the Grammar Police aren't always interested in correcting our errors. The following email came to us from a listener named Chuck. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I'm a recovering grammar policeman, and I often roll my eyes when I hear Tom reading notices from the Grammar Police. I would like to set your mind at ease and set the teeth of the grammar police on edge by asserting a linguistic truth. The only true pronunciation or usage is the local one. If you and your neighbors, understand your message, there's no fault in communication. Communication is, in the end, the purpose of any language. You communicate perfectly well. Keep up the good work and good humor."
So you are a good communicator because you communicate perfectly well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exact.
He communicates good.
That's right, communicates good. So I've got to chime in here with something interesting. So yeah. I had a trainer years ago, and I said, "Here you are," and I've talked about him. You know, he was a hockey player, and I said, "You guys get dressed up in a suit and tie before you go out and bang each other up on the ice." And he said, "Look good, feel good, play good." Now, it should be look good, feel good, play well, but that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't go with the, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It doesn't have the rhyme to it. So, yes, that's it. I'll give a little applause. That means I can't make errors because I'm communicating
right.
with you.
That's right.
And as long as you can understand it. That's it. That's it.
Do you think Zorba deserves a break from the endless infractions handed out by the grammar police? Or is now not the time to give up the pious pursuit of grammar perfection?
Oh, I love it. The pious piety. We'll call them prigs, P-R-I-G. We'll call them pious people.
Let us know by posting to our Facebook page or sending us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or, of course, as Tom said, Facebook.
Our recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc, Zorba Pastor, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 1-800-462-7413. An open line for you now at 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, eggplant with braised chickpeas.
I know. I can just tell
you keep
how
doing this
you are.
To me.
I know.
Just, week after week right. after week.
After week. It's just terrible. Healthy food is just awful. And by the way, why can't you say family chef? Why do you have to say family doc? See, I should be family chef.
All right.
Family
I'll
chef
remember
doc.
That.
But you know, Tom,
I'll remember that.
Tom, we've got to move you into the century of good eating.
You're
you know?
A spectacular doctor and a very excellent chef.
See, now really, compliments like that will get you everywhere. You know, next time what we're going to do is sloppy joes on white bread.
But really, really good chefs are not my favorite people.
I know that. You're a meat and potatoes kind of guy, with tofu being a distant cousin.
Okay. That's
exactly it. But there's no tofu in this. So think about it. A recipe without tofu has got to be a good recipe.
I think there's eggplant in here.
There is eggplant. Now, I remember when I was a kid and my mother first brought home eggplant, I remember tasting it going, oh, yuck, I'm not going to eat that. But in those days, I wouldn't eat mushrooms, you know. But eggplant done right is good. Now, we have to repeat that time. Eggplant does right is good.
I don't eat eggplant, and I don't eat mushrooms.
But for people who like eggplant and chickpeas, this is great. Okay. Well, one of the things I like about this is actually this is really simple. So I'm going to give you the nice, simple, easy way to do it. Start out with a can, a 15-ounce can of tomatoes.
A can of tomatoes.
Now, when you go to the store, there are a lot of different cans of tomatoes. There's just a 15-ounce can of tomatoes. You can get fire-roasted tomatoes. You can get tomatoes with garlic. You can get diced tomatoes. I happen to like tomatoes with garlic or fire-roasted, and they have a different taste to them. And canned tomatoes, buy a can. I will sometimes buy the store brand, but I usually don't. Mm-hmm. I buy a name brand such as Hunt's because I've tasted the difference, and there really is a difference. They're really grade A. Mm-hmm. Store brands like Trader Joe's or Costco brands are obviously very good because they have a very good store brand, but some of the store brands are not. So pick out canned tomatoes you like.
Mm-hmm.
Cup of water.
A cup of water.
Now, the water really makes a difference, Tom. You know? You like that,
only
don't you?
Primo
don't
water.
Don't you like that? Only Primo water. Only water that costs $100 a gallon will work for this water. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One chipotle pepper in adobo sauce.
One chipotle pepper in adobo
sauce. That's right. You get it in a can. You know, in the Mexican section when you go shopping for Mickey in the drugstore, you just take out a can of it and keep the rest of them in the refrigerator.
Can of this in the drugstore?
That's right. That's exactly it.
Okay.
That's about where you would find the can because you don't go to the grocery store.
Okay.
One can of garbanzo beans, which are chickpeas rinsed.
Mm-hmm. A can of garbanzo beans.
If you ever looked at the chickpeas, they look like a little chicken. They really do.
They don't look like a chicken.
As a kid, kids play with them. They look like a chicken on their tummy. Okay. Now, here's my favorite.
I may be really, really, really dumb about food, but those don't look like chickens.
That's right. Okay, you called me on that. Okay, here it is. Ba-ba-da-da, one bunch of kale, ends trimmed and chopped. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is a recipe that uses kale.
A bunch of kale, ends trimmed and chopped.
Now, I recently had a kidney stone, or maybe I should rephrase that. I recently had the pleasure of a kidney stone.
Ooh, that's not fun.
It's not pleasurable. And one of the things you don't eat often is large amounts of kale if you have kidney stones, because the thought is it may increase the calcium of kidney stones. Mm. Now, large amounts of kale probably is a bunch 3 to 4 times a day. Some people love kale. They eat a lot of kale, but, you know, it's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
A teaspoon of cumin.
A teaspoon of cumin.
One eggplant trimmed and sliced horizontally.
An eggplant trimmed and sliced horizontally.
Yeah, well, eggplant is horizontally. You know, you can slice it in the round or you can slice it horizontally.
What difference does it make?
Well, horizontal means up and down.
I know what they mean, but who cares?
Hey, come on. You're testing me with the recipe.
All right.
You know, it's a style issue. You know, look good, and then it's good.
Moving right along.
2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Now, 1/4 cup of crumbled cotija cheese.
1/4 cup crumbled cotija cheese.
Crumpled cotija cheese. Yeah. Now, you know the street corn that you get in Mexico City when you walk around?
Okay.
Yeah, that's right, because you've never had that and you would never eat the street corn. It has a taste to it. That is the cotija cheese. Just for those people who are adventurous eating who have eaten it in Mexico, you immediately know it. When anyone who's had that corn knows exactly what that cheese tastes like. Mm-hmm. Okay. A tablespoonful of cilantro. If you are a non-cilantro person, then a tablespoonful of parsley.
A big tea cilantro or parsley.
That's right, a parsley. And then you're going to use some salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Let's make the recipe. So, in a blender, put a can of tomatoes, the water, the chipotle in adobo. Blend it until smooth. Pour it into a medium skillet. Set it over medium heat along with the garbanzo beans, kale, and a few pinches of salt. Bring to a gentle simmer. Cover, cook for about 15 to 20 minutes, giving it a taste. Adjust the salt to your liking, and if you want to, add a few more pinches of salt. Then, sprinkle the eggplant slices with a few pinches of cumin in a medium skillet. Set it over medium heat. Add the olive oil. When the oil is hot, add the sliced eggplant and cook on both sides for about 2 to 3 minutes. You sort of want to cook it and char it. Sprinkle it with some salt. Transfer it on top of the garbanzo beans. Repeat until you've cooked all of the eggplant through and through. That'll be probably about 10 or 15 minutes. Garnish the dish with minced cilantro and that wonderful, wonderful cotija cheese and some parsley, and you've got eggplant with braised chickpeas. Mm.
And if anybody wants this recipe...
You know, that's such a downer the way you're saying it. I mean, you can't say like if anybody wants this recipe. You say, hey, if you want this recipe, come to our website, zorbapastor.org. You will find this recipe, other recipes, wonderful recipes. That's zorbapastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
Let's get back to the phones now. 800-462-7413, our number, 1-800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hey, good evening. I mean, salutations. I'm telling what time it is.
Evening, morning, whatever. How can we help?
Yes, I was calling in regards to my wife. She has an ankle that swells. It's pretty much every day. I'm thinking it might be lymphatic. I don't think it's her bursa, because I've actually popped my bursa a couple times when I was younger. But it's been going on for well over 8 months.
Wow. Wow. What does she do? What does she do for exercise?
Walking, sit on a yoga ball. We've got two small children, so we're pretty active.
Yeah, with two small children, you would be active. How old are the kids?
4, and the youngest will be 3 in July.
Continuous movement, right? Continuous movement. It's like they never stop, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You go around. So anything that she's on, any medications that she's on?
No. So we'll take occasional Tylenol or naproxen for the swelling.
But she's not on any regular medications.
No.
And so how old is she?
25.
25. Any medical problems that she has?
No.
How about injuries? Any injuries to that ankle?
She had thought about this because one time she was shaving her legs and nicked her ankle, and then went later that day to get a pedicure, and she thinks those are related. Either an infection got in or
I'll tell you something. If there's an infection of the ankle or the skin, your ankle or your skin or your foot is going to be red hot and swollen and painful, you know. And so if it wasn't red hot, swollen and painful, chances of being an infection are really pretty minimal. You know, one of the things we look at when a swollen ankle is whether or not we're stretching the ligaments. Lymphatic is definitely an idea that there's something going on with lymphatic system, because what happens is the veins return about 98% of the fluid in our body to the heart, but the lymphatic system returns about 2-3%. And when it gets stretched, either on yoga or something else, so one of the questions is, how often does she do yoga?
She tries to at least, stretch that out daily. I have her, because whenever I get shin splints, I notice it helps my ankle, too. Put my heel on a towel at the end and use my toes to scrunch up that towel towards the heel, yeah.
Right. That is it. That is exactly it. So I've got a couple of suggestions. So first of all, one of the things is sometimes the system will be awry and can't catch up. So she may have stretched it the wrong way, moved it the wrong way, and all of a sudden you have this chronic fluid. So one way is to try to get rid of the fluid, and you do that by going to the store and getting an elastic ankle brace, not an ACE wrap because they're really very difficult to keep on, but you get a neoprene wrap that you wrap around the ankle, the foot and the ankle, and you keep that on. You won't be able to sleep with it at night, but you keep it on during the day, and you keep it on pretty much for a week or two, and sometimes that will keep the lymphatic system from stretching out filling up with fluid, and then over time it sort of stops doing it. It seems like a strange thing. It doesn't really have a memory. But if you can just collapse the lymphatic system and the veins down there, that may be the way to take care of it. That's one thing I would do right away. Go out to the drugstore, buy them. They have a variety of them. I always recommend go to a big drugstore so you can return it. If it doesn't fit right, it doesn't feel right, you go and get another one or a sporting goods store. An Aircast will be okay, but they don't always stay in that long. Now, what business are you in if you know an Aircast?
I've had an Aircast before. Okay. Whenever I busted my bursa.
I just wondered if you were in the medical business, because not a lot of people.
I'm going to school for biomedical engineering, actually.
Oh, so you know that. Aircast would work because it would keep down. An Aircast is this sort of contraption, keeps down not only the ankle, but it actually pushes also on the calf muscle. So an Aircast, if you got that, would work. But the whole idea is to sort of collapse the veins and collapse the lymphatic system. But the other thing I would look at is there an exercise in yoga that is doing this? That's kind of the other question. So while you're doing this, I'd lay off the yoga. I wouldn't lay off the stretches. I think the stretches you're talking about are good stretches. But I think I'd lay off the yoga. And the reason is I would want to find out if there's something I'm doing with yoga that's disturbing my lymphatic system. That's what I would want to find out. So I'd lay off it until you get it under control. But an Aircast, a splint is going to make a difference and keep up the stretches.
Okay. What about, would a steroid help?
Not usually, and I'll tell you, anti-inflammatories, if you're going to take it, which can be very useful, you've got to take it in a high enough dose to work. So I recommend 2 Aleve tablets twice a day. That's equivalent to 4 ibuprofen 3 times a day. And nobody can take a drug 3 times a day. I mean, you can take it twice a day, but once it gets to 3 times, people forget. So 2 Aleve, I always say, if you want to get rid of inflammation, 2 Aleve twice a day, 2 weeks. In other words, whether you've got it or not, 2 Aleve twice a day, 2 weeks. So if you add Aleve to it, the stretching exercises, and once again, the neoprene sleeve or something of that nature, or the Aircast, that'll do the trick. And, of course, she's going to walk around and play with the kids. You've got a 3-year-old, almost a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old, which is really neat.
Yeah. How effective would ginger be? I know it's a natural anti-inflammatory.
She can try it. You know, it might work and do something. I think it's really working on this, actually on the ankle with the, you know, logically in the architecture with the ankle, with the stretching that she's doing and with the compression. I think that's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck.
Okay, awesome. I really appreciate it, Doc.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
That's at 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Now, before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named John in Spokane, Washington. He writes, Dr. Zorba, I have enjoyed your radio show for many years. However, as an experienced, licensed psychologist, I'd like to offer a friendly critique of your comments on Freud and dreams in a recent column you wrote. You state that Sigmund Freud's interpretation of dreams was a hodgepodge, non-scientific, gobbledygook hogwash.
That's exactly what I said.
Freud was a prominent, humane neurologist who developed a new and wholly unique way of scientifically looking at human consciousness, emotions, behaviors, and mental illness. His approach was revolutionary at the time and the start of worldwide broadening of social acceptance of the existence of mental illnesses and the development of the much more widely available biopsychosocial treatments we have today. As you know, science moves on. Theories are researched and refined over time, and certain hypotheses are rejected honorably and respectfully with new evidence. We professionals are best advised to refer to outdated theories and methods with respect, in part to avoid confusing the public. While some of Freud's major tenets have been replaced by newer conceptualizations, some of his groundbreaking insights are still very much evident in current mental health treatments as well as research.
Well, that's very interesting. Obviously, this is a Freudian psychologist. There, and there have been a number of books recently about Freud. Well, the answer, the idea of the unconscious was really important. But then he also had a gobbledygook of theories concerning concerning dreams and psychoanalysis. He claimed that they were scientifically involved, but there was no science behind them. He was really a philosopher who then talked about psychology. And then he had all this other wacko ideas of how children develop. And then his whole concept of penis envy in women is something that Freudian psychologists never talk about. But that was a big thing. And then, of course, the statement a cigar is only a cigar or really a cigar. So Freud had a lot of garbage with him. Now, it is true he had some stuff that was there. But science was changing at the time that he did it. And the idea that Freud was the one who actually brought it out of the hysteria of Bedlam into the modern age was happening because he happened to be at the same time that modern medicine was there. But one of the negative, really negative issues about Freud was that people were in catatonic depression in mental hospitals when antidepressants were invented. And many, many psychiatrists for about 5 to 10 years refused to use antidepressants because instead they say you've got to use Freud psychotherapy. And these are people who are catatonic. They had to be fed. They were in mental hospitals. And all of a sudden when they started using antidepressants, the mental hospitals started just not having nearly as many people. And Freudian psychiatry started to take a back seat to modern scientific medicine.
That's really interesting. Do you disagree with the good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, of course, another topic to talk about, and we'll be quacking up with Dr. Zorba, too, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. But Zorba, before our next call, we talk about some drugs that cause dementia?
Right. And that's exactly what this study is about. And it brings up some interesting issues, which are certain drugs possibly causing dementia. So let's look at the drugs that they looked at. And once again, observational study, not a double-blind study, trying to look, this is a study out of the UK, trying to look whether or not certain drugs were associated with dementia. And there may not be a cause and effect, by the way. It may be people who are at risk for dementia are actually taking these drugs. Now, what were the drugs? They're drugs that are used for Parkinsonism. We'll talk a little bit about them. They're drugs that are used for urinary incontinence, mostly used by women. There are drugs that are used for depression, tricyclic old-fashioned antidepressants. And they have an anticholinergic cognitive burden. Huh? Interesting. That's right. Exactly right. You got it. You got it right in that. But it has to do with how much anticholinergic activity. Cholinergic activity has to do with the sympathetic nervous system. This is the part, one of the involuntary systems in the body that kind of regulates things, regulates when we pee and we don't pee, how we urinate, how we move, vagus nerve, a whole bunch of different things. And they looked at these drugs, people who are prescribed drugs for urinary incontinence, Parkinsonism, and some old antidepressants, to find out whether or not they influence the risk of dementia 20 years later. Now, the Brits have tremendous statistics because they have one HMO, one insurance company. It's called the government.
Yeah.
And so they can look back on things. And they found out, lo and behold, looking 20 years back on people with dementia, the people who had received these drugs appeared to have a higher risk of dementia if they had gotten the drugs. In other words, getting the drugs might actually be a risk factor for dementia.
People need to be healthy. Are there alternative drugs to those that you
Well, the issue is this. Urinary incontinence, big issue. You know, big issue. This is not a small issue. Old-fashioned antidepressants, tricyclic, sometimes they're very, very useful. Parkinsonian drugs so you can move around and actually do, very, very important. But no one has looked at long-term effects of these drugs on the brain and brain development. Is that what's going on? Or do people who take these drugs, are they simply down the road for dementia, and is that really what's going on?
So we don't know.
No, we don't know. That's exactly it. But I think it reminds us that the drugs we get have side effects. And it reminds us also that if we take a drug, we have to have a good reason to take the drug. And it reminds us, physicians and patients, you know, alike, that if you're going to take a medication, take it for as long as you need it. And when you don't need it anymore, stop taking it. So some of these drugs may be short-term, and we keep people on it long-term thinking that they're safe, when in fact the long-term use may actually cause side effects.
800-462-7413 is our number, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, how can we help?
About a year and a half ago, I was involved in a car accident, and I was rear-ended. And since then, when I've tried therapy, when I turn my neck either to the right or to the left after several times, I develop nausea and this gagging effect.
Oh, wow.
And I was wondering what's going on.
Gee, you turn your neck too far to the right or the left and you get instant nausea or after some time?
Instant. I can turn my head, like, sometimes I can turn as much as 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then, or I should say about 10 times, and then sometimes I can just turn my neck to the left or right 2 or 3 times, and then I start this, I get nauseous, and I have this gagging.
Oh, God. Holy cow. So you've talked to your doctors about this or not?
Yes, I have, and one doctor said that it was all in my head.
I was going to exactly. Well, they're right. It is in your head, but it's they weren't off. That's not what they meant by the communication. That's not what they meant by the communication. Are your eyes, is the world spinning when you're doing this?
No, I'm not spinning.
Okay.
My head isn't spinning. I thought I had non-benign.
Right, benign positional vertigo, but benign positional vertigo is when your eyes are twitching. You know, they have something called an nystagmus, and they're twitching and moving. So that is not the case. Your head is not spinning. You haven't noticed anything of that nature. So you went to one doctor. They said it's all in your head. You went to another doctor then?
I did go to another doctor, and they put me on an antidepressant.
An antidepressant. Once again, saying it's all in your head, here's an antidepressant, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's so,
yes.
So they both. By the way, so what the antidepressant do, by the way?
Basically, I guess it's helped me with my anxiety since the car accident, but nothing has helped with the gagging and the nausea.
Okay, so the antidepressant which you're on has helped with the anxiety, the car accident. How long ago was the car accident again?
A year and a half.
So quite a bit. Quite a traumatic car accident. I mean, it sounds like you're still suffering from it in terms of anxiety. Is that right?
Yes. He rear-ended me. Totaled my car up.
Oh, terrible. Mm-hmm. Terrible. Mm-hmm. But you're alive. You're around.
Yes, I'm alive.
Yeah. By the way, I'll talk to you about this nausea. Are you getting therapy for that? Any talk therapy to try to go through that at all?
Was, but I haven't had therapy now in 6 months. Talk therapy. I've just been on a medication.
Yeah. Are you better since you've been on the medication then? It sounds like you might be a little better or not.
I am a little better. The nausea for the anxiety, but
the
nausea.
For the anxiety. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds to me like, first of all, you got into an accident. Lots of stuff is happening. You're rear-ended. Your body is moving. Tremendous things happen. The neck, one of the reasons, of course, we have the pad up high in a car is to keep our neck in place so it doesn't twist, but there's still a tremendous amount of power depending on how fast the car plows into you. So we know your neck, your ears, had trauma. We know that for sure. And for some reason, when you turn your neck significantly far, you're then producing some sort of a vagal response, V-A-G-A-L. You can look up the vagus nerve, a vagal response that then is causing nausea, because the vagus nerve is chiefly responsible for nausea. When we get sick, and our body gets sick, and let's say we ate something we shouldn't have eaten, and we get nauseous or we drink too much, it's the vagus nerve that actually stimulates us to vomit. I mean, so that's a very important nerve. Goes to the body. It does lots of things. It regulates the heart. It can reduce sweating. It can reduce nausea. It doesn't usually produce nystagmus, although it can produce, and you don't have nystagmus, is where your eyes are twitching. Have you gone to any physical therapy for neck movements?
Yes.
And how often? Tell me what they did.
They did massage. Mm-hmm. I did the TENS unit.
Okay.
They also put me on the traction, which actually helped the best.
Okay, good. And by the way, did they do something called Apley's maneuver where they put your head and moved it into different areas that they often use for benign positional vertigo?
Yes, and he told me he tried that several times, mm-hmm. but the thing was for me to keep my eyes open,
mm-hmm.
but I felt like I wanted to close my eyes
because
I was going back. So, I did try that.
Uh-huh. Okay, I've got a couple of suggestions because that's where I think you're going to get bang for your buck. I don't think it's from the pills. I think you should stay on the pills for the sort of PTSD from the car accidents. But I have two recommendations that you do for your neck over time. First of all, look up Apley's Maneuver. If you go to our website, we'll do a link to that. But you can do Apley's Maneuver. You don't have to keep your eyes open. You can do it with your eyes closed. And most people actually do it with their eyes closed. You look up Apley's Maneuver on the web. It shows you how to do it at home. You can do it, and you do it every morning before you when you get out of bed. You might get out of bed to go to the washroom, but then you lie in bed. You do Apley's Maneuver once in the morning. You do Apley's Maneuver once at night. Very important, because you may have something that's going on in the inner ear. You may have this little calcium deposit that's in the wrong place that's causing this, and that is triggered when you turn your head. So I recommend Apley's Maneuver twice a day, 1 month, no matter what.
Okay.
Whether you think you need it or not, if you didn't get it taught by the physical therapist, you might go back. But frankly, when you go on the web, and as I said, our website will give you a connector. You go on the web, you can do it at home. Very easy to do. You rest your head. Number two, you need to do range of motion activities in the shower or with a heating pad every single day with your neck. You've got to be that. A shower is a good place to do it. You gently do range of motion to the right, range of motion to the left, but there should be heat involved because heat can really make a difference and you'll get farther. So you can stretch those muscles and those ligaments that are actually triggering this vagal response because it's being triggered by the muscles when you're turning around. It somehow is triggering the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is actually affected right there. If you put your hand on the top of your carotid artery, there's the carotid bulb, and if you massage that, I don't recommend you do it, you actually are massaging the vagal nerve, which all of a sudden will drop your pulse. And that's probably what is stretching when you're turning your head to the right and to the left.
Okay.
And once again, just like Apley's Maneuver, at least once a day, get that neck moving back and forth. And with both of those things, I think you're going to finally get through this. You've got to get the stretching out so it doesn't activate the vagal nerve, and we're going to hit it both ways. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. Thank you so very, very much.
You're welcome. And keep up with that antidepressant. It's very good for PTSD.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413, our number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, time again to trudge through the murky waters of medical quackery. Let's fire up another segment of Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, we're not going back too far for this one. Tell us about medicinal silver and the Montana politician who used it until he was literally blue in the face.
That's right, blue in the face. Medicinal silver. You know, it's very interesting, medicinal silver, which, by the way, is used in folk, still used in small amounts in folk remedies all around the world. But this guy thought, as they did back in around the 1800s, that medicinal silver medicinal silver, which is associated with the moon, by the way. Mm-hmm. The sun is associated with gold. I don't know if you knew that, Tom. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Oh. And the moon is associated with silver because, okay, you know, silver like that. That medicinal silver was really an important thing to do. And the rich, I don't know if you know that, the rich who ate silver because they ate off of silver spoons, silver goblets, silver plates, often turned blue, and that's why they were called blue bloods. Now, I don't know if that's not the whole reason they were called blue bloods, but that's a lot of it. So that if you eat and ingest a lot of silver, and Stan Jones, a libertarian politician who unsuccessfully, let me remind you, unsuccessfully ran for the Senate of Montana and for the governor, both in 2000, twice for both of these, between 2000 and 2006, ingested enough medicinal silver to make himself turn blue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he had a severe case of, it's called argyria, A-R-G-R-I-A, which means drinking large amounts of colloidal silver. This guy was drinking colloidal silver because he felt it would make him more robust, make him healthier, and because he was a blue blood, maybe he would win the seat for the Senate seat or governor's seat.
Which he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Was there any benefit?
No, it's quackery. Silver has no benefit. Silver is not good for us. I mean, you know, trace amounts is not going to hurt you.
Aside from making us blue, Does it have any other negative health effects?
First of all, silver can sometimes use in small amounts. It was used in small amounts as an antiseptic. It's used topically in burns. Silvadine is actually silver that's used topically in burns, mm-hmm, that it actually is still useful. But drinking, eating a lot of silver is really not the thing to do. Now, he also drank a lot of silver preparing for Y2K, thinking that there would be an antibiotic shortage. That's why he drank the silver. He thought that if he drank enough silver, when the antibiotic shortage would happen in Y2K, that he would be alive while other people were dying in front of him.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our number, 1-800-462-7413. Before we head out today, Zorba, here's an email we received from a listener named Rod, and I'll just let this one speak for itself. He writes, "Zorba, I love your show, and I got a pretty good chuckle the other day. You were describing an Asian recipe that included 4 skin-on salmon fillets. That sounds very much like foreskin on salmon fillets. I suspect the laugh upped my life expectancy by at least a couple of days. Thank you for the laugh and for great commentaries."
Foreskin salmon delay. Oh, that foreskin salmon, that's fillets.
Did something Zorba say sound a bit fishy? Give us the skinny by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.